Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Let me introduce our panel for tonight. On the end there is Carla Marinucci, glad to have her back with us after about a six-month absence. Carla is the senior political writer at the San Francisco Chronicle. You can follow her on Twitter at @CMarinucci. Next to her is Dr. Larry Gersten. He is the a professor of political science at the San Jose State University, a political analyst at NBC 11, author most recently of Not So Golden After All, The Rise and Fall of California. And we here at Week to Week take particular credit or blame in getting Larry to finally join Twitter. And you can follow him there at L. Gersten.
I have four followers.
He has 101, actually, so let's get those numbers up. And between Larry and me is Deborah J. Saunders, columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle and the token conservative blogger at sfgate.com. Her Twitter name is, you'll never guess this one, Deborah J. Saunders.
So there you go.
Follow her, too. There are question cards spread out throughout the chairs. Please write down and submit your questions. We will answer them later in the program. We'll also try to work some in during our discussion here at the beginning of the program. And, of course, at the end, we will grab two contestants and bring them up here for our news quiz. The winning prize is a genuine bottle of two-buck chuck, which now goes for $2.50, so think of it as an investment. But first, let's talk about the news. And I really just wanted to start off with kind of bringing everyone up to date on what is known right now about the Boston situation. As any of you, if you've been following it throughout the day, you've heard, two explosives went off at the Boston Marathon finish line. At least one, maybe two additional unexploded devices were found and defused by the police. Now three people are reported to have died, including one eight-year-old child. At least 125 people have been injured, including some severely, so it's fully possible the fatality rate will increase. You may have heard of an explosion that happened at Boston's John F. Kennedy Presidential Library. At first, people thought that was connected. They're now saying, no, it was something completely different. There was an electrical fire there. So President Obama spoke to the nation this afternoon, saying, among other things, that we don't yet know who did this or why. So those are the headlines. And as you can guess, Henry Lee at the Chronicle reported today that here in San Francisco, as is happening, I suspect, in every major city across the country, our mayor and the police chief have agreed on the need to heighten security. And city leaders were looking at, you know, the appropriate levels of security for big gatherings, such as, I guess, our next big one will be Beta Breakers. So should be interesting to watch on that. So anyone has any thoughts or any news that we haven't heard about?
It's just a sobering event. I mean, Deborah and I both covered 9/11. Came in 9/11 the same that morning. I remember the feeling, and it all came back today. I had to go and cover the Pentagon crash at the Pentagon right after 9/11. So the warning about vigilance, I think, is well taken now, and until we know more, I think that's going to be
something. Okay, well, I'm sure there will be a lot more reporting and a lot of clarification over the next few days, so keep your eyes on the news for developments. Now let's get into a discussion of, this wasn't planned, it sounds like it's connected, but it really isn't, and that is Congress is addressing the gun issue with an actual bipartisan plan. I don't think we really know. For everyone who doesn't know what bipartisanship is, kind of have to remind ourselves that we're kind of like the Morlocks who are coming out of the caves and, you know, the sunlight. Wait, they're working together? I don't get it. But there's some bipartisanship in the Senate, and they've got a bill that, as I understand it, would expand background checks, cover some loopholes that have been there as far as gun shows and online purchases. Larry, you've been talking about this on NBC 11. Could you maybe give us a rundown of what are some of the issues involved here?
Well, the biggest thing that people were talking about, of course, at the beginning was an assault weapon ban. And then they were talking about these magazines that carry multiple rounds. And of course, I think those were the big attractions, and both of those were swatted down pretty quickly. Then they've talked about, what began as universal background checks, which is now, as John just said, expanded background checks. So what you have is, I've done a lot of work in public policy, and one of the ways we look at public policy is look at substantive public policy, a major change. Like I would say, Obamacare is substantive public policy. Whatever you think about it, it's a major change. And symbolic public policy, where, you sort of paper something over. So I would say, in the end, what we're looking at is a way for people to feel good about doing as little as possible so they can say they did something. And I'm not even sure if that's going to get through, by the way. I don't walk home with that one. I'm not sure it's going to get through at all. But if it does, you're looking at expanded checks, and what it boils down to is, I understand it, there'll be greater attention to when you buy things online, things like that, but if I want to sell a gun to Deborah, it's not going to matter. And there's going to be no checks on that whatsoever. And that seems to be a very big source.
So you mean like person-to-person private sales?
That's right. It will be unaffected. Okay. So, I really believe, and some people would think I'm being cynical about this. I don't mean to be cynical. But I think when Wayne LaPierre goes to sleep tonight, he's feeling pretty good. Because, in fact, his own organization with him at the helm, a very successful one, came out years ago for universal background checks, and they don't have to go that far. So I think he wins on this deal. I think he's winning, and it gets to this whole thing just a second longer about intensity, and in policymaking, it's not just numbers. 90%, wow, say we should have these universal. Well, how many people go to dinner talking about that? They don't. They talk about jobs. They talk about, various social programs and issues. They talk about, Social Security. They talk about things that they feel impact their lives. This is the kind of thing people talk about. Yeah, you're right. And then, sort of like, how about those giants? So I think it's fairly symbolic.
I think the other thing, though, Larry, is I think people don't think gun laws work. I think a lot of people don't think that, and we've noticed that there were, right after the Sandy Hook shootings, which were also horrible, just as today's events were, people really wanted gun control, but they've had more time to think about it, and the numbers have softened because people just don't think that these laws work. I mean, remember, we had an assault weapon ban, and Columbine still happened. So the public has become cynical. And you said that they'll do as little as possible. Maybe that's because that's smart. As much as a lot of advocates said right after Sandy Hook, oh yeah, we're gonna push through all these laws and it's going to happen. In Washington, people knew better. Harry Reid knew better, Senate Majority Leader. Mike Thompson, who's a Democrat's point person on the gun stuff, he came to the Chronicle. He basically told us we weren't going to get the assault weapons ban. Something that was the only thing, and by the way, it's not because of the Republicans, like everyone likes to say, because there are Democrats who are pro-gun, or as AP called them today, from states that are gun-friendly, I guess. So that's sort of like we don't have illegal immigrants. We have people who are here illegally. Yeah. No, we have Democrats who are from gun-friendly states. But I'm not bitter. But so I think what people want is something that's going to work without infringing on rights. And even, by the way, the ACLU had issues with this universal background check. And now we've got this, I'm pretty excited about the fact that we got Senator Manchin from West Virginia, Democrat, Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania, a Republican. Mm-hmm. And they found something that might happen. Now, you're right, Larry. People look at this as there's a winner and there's a loser on this. And a lot of NRA types think, oh, we can't let the Democrats win anything. And they'll fight this and they may win. But there are also people who have been fighting to get the kind of gun bill that just is not palatable for American voters through, and they're a factor in this too.
I'm just wondering in this case whether we're going to see something that maybe defies sort of political wisdom here in the sense of, look, you've got these parents from Sandy Hook And they've been very, very effective, I think, in reminding people about that incident and what happened. The public opinion is still there, and it's very strong. And you're seeing things like the Violence Prevention Center study that came out today, saying that in 2010, the entire year, there were only 106 justifiable deaths, self-defense with guns. In California, in the last 4 years, only 100. So I think I'm wondering if the lobby on the other side of this issue, that is for tougher laws, when you look at these parents and see them, see their faces, I'm wondering if some of these lawmakers at least are going to come to some kind of middle ground here.
I don't think they're going to come to the middle ground. I think they're going to be just above the ground. And by the way, I'm not arguing for anything here. I think I'm pretty analytical about this. You know, when there's a controversial issue, you do what you have to do, which is as little as possible to avoid upsetting the status quo. And so from that point, it makes perfectly good sense. And I think we need to bear in mind numbers here, 90%. I just saw this the other day. 91% I actually saw. But to me, that doesn't mean anything if the intensity is not there. I don't agree that it's necessarily that people are saying, I'm against it because it won't work. I think most people are for it, one way or another. But they're not for it to the point where they're pushing members of Congress. Do this, do that.
Will it be more palatable if there's a mental health...
That's definitely going to go. I think you can expect to see some sort of mental health thing, because who wants to see a nutcase running around with guns? So everybody can get on board on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if you go back, take a step back, whether it's VTI, whether it's Columbine, whether it's Sandy Hook, I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news here. We haven't seen the last of these things. You know,
yes.
And we'll see them again and again, and I think it gets to the fact that the public, as upset as they may be momentarily, this is not a high issue. Whether it will ever become one, I can't say, but it's not a high intensity issue.
And it's important to note that's 90% we hear for background checks, not for the other sort of big package kind of
correct
gun measures. So.
Right.
Today I saw the report, Harry Reid, again, reading the tea leaves, saying he doesn't have the 60 votes he would need to get this bill out, or through, I guess, or moving on. They'll, of course, continue politicking and arm-twisting, but I figure if it's this hard to get a background check bill through
right
the U.S. Senate, which is controlled by the Democrats, who tend to be more from more less gun-friendly states, you know, this thing's dead on arrival in the House, isn't
wait
it?
Are you an AP editor?
I could be. Well, let's move on unless you had any thoughts on anyone wants to say that, no, it's actually going to live in the House. That's where it's going to blossom into.
What's in your water?
Right.
No, I don't think so.
Well, another area where there is some strange bipartisanship movement going on is immigration. And one of the areas, I mean, in Congress that we've had some senators who've come together again, starting to thaw out, I guess, some ideas that they've kicked around in the past. Outside of Congress, which we've seen something here in Silicon Valley, Mark Zuckerberg has teamed up with the leaders of Google and LinkedIn and Yahoo to create this organization, FWD.US, which I assume means Forward US.
Right.
What do you folks think of? What do you think of that approach of kind of the Silicon Valley trying to push this issue and their agenda in it?
You know, the Silicon Valley aspect of it is fascinating, and this is where we are really going to see, I think, some movement on this issue. Why? These guys have lots of money and lots of clout with people on Capitol Hill. The reports that we heard is that Zuckerberg alone may put $50 million into this pack. He's got other people putting in. And these people are listened to. They need high-skilled workers. They want high-skilled workers. The H-1B system is not working for them anymore. Those visas are gone within a week of their availability. And these voices in Silicon Valley are being heard like average citizens aren't heard. They've got the money behind it. But besides the Silicon Valley contingent, you have these other very interesting voices coming forward. Evangelicals, that whole movement is making a very big play to open up immigration. You know, it's so interesting how quickly this has changed. We remember talking to Mitt Romney, Meg Whitman, even our gubernatorial candidate, talking about how, you know, you're going to have to track down and find every undocumented immigrant here, and we may have to... That nobody is talking about that anymore. Nobody wants to mention amnesty, the word, but it's sounding very much like amnesty when you're talking about a path to citizenship that even folks like Marco Rubio are seem to be getting close to.
They've moved beyond the self-deportation concept.
Yes, yes.
Silicon Valley has been complaining about H-1B programs for at least 10 years. They're never enough. Farmers, the agriculture community, many of us don't realize that, have been suffering terribly because they don't have enough workers. 3 out of 4 agricultural workers in California is, can we say, an illegal immigrant, undocumented resident? What word would be acceptable?
I would say illegal immigrant.
Okay, whatever you want to say, okay? So
if that's what they are.
I'll accept it. They've got food, you know, and product, just drop it off. I mean, but this too is not new. Okay, what is new? What is new is that 71% of all Latinos voted for Barack Obama in 2012. That 70% of Asian Americans voted for Barack Obama in 2012. 95% of African Americans, always loyal, voted for Barack Obama. And that these minorities are rapidly becoming the majorities, and suddenly Republicans have awakened. Holy smokes! We got nobody to vote for us. That's what's driving this bill. That's what's driving this bill, pure and simple, and everyone else can take all the credit they want. I think Republicans have finally gotten it, and it looks like they're working toward a bipartisan bill, and we haven't seen that in a long time.
Deborah? I think this thing is just going to fall apart.
Ooh.
And I'll tell you why. In 2008, the Democrats were really pushing the Dream Act. They were not pushing for something that is basically amnesty. Now we've gone, and that helped Barack Obama win the election. And the fact that, and you know, Mitt Romney was against the Dream Act, which is ridiculous if you ask me, because, but for people who don't know, the Dream Act basically would have a path to citizenship for children who are illegal immigrants, but they were, you know, 7 years old when they came here. It wasn't their choice. Now we're talking about something that is really a big change. There are reports that there are a lot of people now trying to get over the border so that they can get in with this. And you know, the country also has a conservative streak about this issue. And let me just remind folks of one other thing. 2006, 2007, George Bush, John McCain were really pushing for what they would call an immigration reform bill. And it sank because there are all these different factions and people with an interest in it not necessarily passing, but to use it as an election issue. John McCain has never forgiven Barack Obama for his vote on what was considered a poison pill amendment for guest workers. You're going to see this time around there are going to be factions that want H-1, that your high-tech guys want H-1B visas. Well, there are a lot of left-leaning groups. They don't care about H-1B visas. They might even be lukewarm. They want basically amnesty. And then there's the whole issue of the guest worker program. Republicans don't want to go for a bill unless it has that. A lot of Democrats don't want that. I have to say, I know that I know what the conventional wisdom is, and it could be that a good bill would come out of this, but I just don't see it happening.
Well, it's not a good bill, Deborah.
I didn't say good bill. I mean, I didn't say it was a good bill or a bad bill. I'm saying
it's a necessary bill. I would suggest that if this bill doesn't come to pass, the fault will be laid at the Republicans' feet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it will be the first big shot in the arm for a Democrat. I don't care who that person is running in 2016. Mm-hmm. The numbers in terms of minorities in this country becoming the majority as voters, the numbers are overwhelming. And inasmuch as 85% of the Republican Party is white, if they don't find a way to expand that base, they're cooked.
And California is always a trendsetter. What you've seen in California happen in the Republican Party here is going to happen in the rest of the country. This immigration issue has driven that here. That
it may well be that the next presidential race, you have some smart Republicans who don't think that they have to run to the right of each other in order to win the nomination.
So they're not going to have a primary in that, right?
No. But, you know, it always astonished me that Rudy Giuliani didn't run as the pro-choice Republican, for example. And the way that they felt that they had to outdo each other on immigration, that was not a good thing for the party. But remember, a lot of the, you know, so-called moderates they didn't run this time around. They were afraid to. I think that's going to change. So even if the bill fails, that doesn't mean that the nominee or some high-profile Republicans will be for a bill.
And I think one more thing on Silicon Valley. I mean, I think people realize, first, A, you can't throw 11 million people out, not who, you know, when we talk about Mitt Romney, talking about them registering, he did say that, and that was not that long ago. So people understand that. They also understand that in Silicon Valley, look at the immigrant population you're looking at and the people who have come in and within a generation have done amazing things in Silicon Valley. That's the kind of high-skilled worker that we're going to educate them and send them back to India, China, Korea. That's the issue. The H-1B visa, by the way, I mean, I think there is an understanding that whole system has to be revised because why? There are a lot of these H-1B visas go to kids in Mumbai who are coming here working for lower wages and then go back. That's not working, I think, and people understand that.
Carla's my best friend, right? This is the truth, if you don't know it. But this drives me nuts. You can't
Should
send
I move here?
We can't get rid of 11 million people. How many people have smoked marijuana? Right? Do we put them all in jail? No, it's still illegal. Now, and I don't think it should be, but that's another issue. The point is, nobody's talking about, and even Mitt Romney.
But they were. Come on.
He didn't say that we're going to go after and deport. Self-deportation, by definition, I hate to say this, but by definition, that means not everybody goes. Right.
Is that AP approved?
Yeah, no. Really. Nothing I say is AP approved.
Okay.
Nothing.
I'll leave that.
I want to say two things about this real quick. Number one, we have this vision of everybody jumping over fences. 40% of those 11 million people are here on overextended visas.
Absolutely.
We're not talking about the kinds of crazy numbers that we hear, you know. So let's come down to earth. The other thing I want to point out is this is interesting to me, this little group, this super PAC that Zuckerberg and his friends are putting together, which, you know, here come the numbers, is a 501c4. Not a 501c3, which means that just like the Koch brothers and all those other guys on the right that liberals have been complaining about, the Zuckerberg gang is going to be the same kind of group.
Except I see a difference in this way.
Silicon
Valley, these young tech moguls, do not play in the political sandbox like the way everyone else does. They're not on party lines. They've grown up with, this is a generational difference. You ask any of your kids who are in their 20s, they have no interest in political parties, or a lot of them do not. Zuckerberg one week is sitting down having dinner with Barack Obama, and the next week he's having Chris Christie over his house in Palo Alto.
Look.
This is a different mentality, and it's all about what can I get. They're coming at it with a tech mentality.
He may be politically ambidextrous.
It's not about political lines. Yes.
Okay? He may be politically ambidextrous. That's just fine. The fact is, with both hands, they're hiding the money. Okay?
You're right.
That's why we have two hands.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's... if you will, look overseas for the next topic, and that is Britain, of course, has been spending a lot of time lately mourning and celebrating, for some of them, the death of Margaret Thatcher, their former prime minister. There are reports that at one point Margaret Thatcher was asked what her greatest achievement was, and she replied, Tony Blair and New Labour. Meaning, and I think she was only partly joking,
Blair moved over.
She, through the force of what she brought to that country and changed it, whether you agree with it or not, basically allowed Tony Blair to come in and take an avowedly socialist party. I mean, literally socialist, not just, you know, what, you know, Rush Limbaugh might call them, and turn them into a market-friendly and wildly popular party in its own right, in her wake. So I just wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about your thoughts on Margaret Thatcher, because, of course, her effects were not just in Britain. She had a very close political partnership and friendship with President Ronald Reagan, and she has millions and millions of fans and foes in the United States as well. So anyone, Carla, any thoughts?
Well, you know, Deborah and I both covered the funeral of Ronald Reagan at Simi Valley, and we did see Margaret Thatcher there. She clearly had a very strong relationship. And in many ways, I mean, mirrored him in his in the ability to sort of connect with people. She was from average roots, not aristocratic roots, somebody who kind of understood. But at the same time, I think I was in Argentina for an extended period during the Falklands War. And I can tell you she was not loved in a great part of the world. And in being there at that time was very interesting. I think she was much more sort of doctrinaire. She was much more hard-hearted. I mean, then Ronald Reagan had an ability sort of to be...
She was harder to love than Ronald Reagan.
She's much harder to love, I think, and has, I think, many more critics.
Larry?
But that's okay. In England, you keep a stiff upper lip. You don't have to love them. Just respect them, you know. She got the respect, you know.
Yeah.
I think you're right, you know. Reagan had a way of... He had a softness to him that was... That, you know, like a twinkle in his eye, you know. He could be conservative, but you know, you walked in there. You walked into a meeting with Reagan, you hated what he was about, you hated what he was saying, and you walked out of there arm in arm. You know, just one of those infectious things about him.
My stepfather.
I loved everything he said. What are you talking about? Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan are having tea in heaven right
That's
now.
That's it. And jelly beans.
And jelly beans. My stepfather, who didn't agree with Ronald Reagan on much of anything at all, would still say every time after he listened to a State of the Union speech, it's like, I can't stand what he said, but I like the guy. Simon Schama, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, the British historian on the left, as he puts himself, had a piece in the Weekend Financial Times, and he was talking about this... The fact that even you had so many people who really did not like Margaret Thatcher, who did give her that respect, because they realized she was not a traditional conservative. She was, in fact, I mean, some of her biggest foes were the old line, upper crust British gentry, if that's the right word.
Right.
And she was, sorry?
Chauvinist.
Well, she was definitely a British first person.
Well, you mentioned chauvinist. I mean, I think that's kind of one of the interesting things. She insisted she was not a feminist. I would say, I mean, she was. She was a great example of feminism in leadership, and somebody who just
she had to fight people who underestimated her, the old guard Whig chauvinists, and she found she showed that being underestimated can be a good tool.
How many people saw the Meryl Streep film? And what were your thoughts on that? I mean, was that did that change? Did it, do you think it provided a different view of her than people kind of got just watching the newsreels?
I think her the personal struggle she had coming up and her just determination to succeed in an atmosphere where at that time women did not succeed very often. I mean that was admirable. Many of her economic policies, I think, were not as admirable, or at least are today hotly debated.
Well, and someone wrote in a question saying, Margaret Thatcher destroyed the working class, which was terrible for England. Please comment.
Unions, yes.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you've heard the commentaries this week. A lot of people still feel that she was extremely hard-hearted, not sympathetic to unions, to working people. And I think that's something you when you're judging her entire legacy, that is definitely there.
I think she saw the UK slipping into socialism and she stopped it. And that she did that because she thought it was the best thing for the country. So, I don't agree with that assessment.
Well, she had support for what she did. She didn't stop it by herself. She had a majority in Parliament. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, a lot of that was reflective of the times, and she managed to take advantage of those times, and to her credit. But I think you're right. Lost in that shuffle is the fact that, let's put it this way. She's not going to get an Organized Labor's Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Not unless there's a target there. We tend to glamorize a lot of these people, whether it's Thatcher or Carter or Reagan, and we tend to overlook some of the controversies that happened to all of them during their presidency or prime ministership. And that's just part of our rearview mirror examination of things.
Well, speaking of glorifying politicians, let's move on to the California governor's race. And we're looking at 2014. Carla, you recently wrote about Evo Maldonado, a former congressman, former lieutenant governor, apparently positioning himself to be a challenger to Governor Brown.
That's right.
What can you tell us about it?
Well, you know, Jerry Brown, 76, and California, you were saying, Larry, of the politicians here, we have the oldest group of politicians of any country, right? Average age?
Any state.
You know, when you look at the number of people in the House in their 70s, and Jerry Brown, 76, and looking at a fourth term, and yet the Republicans really have nobody, or did it look like they had...
They have a lot of old people.
You would think they could elect
someone.
They're
just not in office.
Not to say. Look, but the fact is that... the Republicans really seem to have no one who could challenge Sherry Brown. In the last couple of weeks, though, Abel Maldonado has come forward, and here's their sort of game plan here. Oh, well, you know, this is a Latino, a young guy in his 40s, name recognition. The Republicans telling me, why are we going to give Jerry Brown the stage to go up and down the state, raise money, get even more legislative seats in the, in the Senate and the Assembly. Let's challenge him. Abel Maldonado stepped forward, and he's got John Weaver, somebody who worked for McCain. He's got Fred Davis, the guy who produced the famous Demon Sheep ad. So he's got some heavy hitters on the Republican side. And I think their strategy is, let's send him up and down the state. Let's have him campaign in, East L.A. and some of the areas where the Latino vote might be, amenable to listening to someone. The guy has an interesting history. Grew up picking strawberries in Santa Maria. His family, he's the son of an immigrant. So the Republicans are posing this as son of an immigrant versus son of Sacramento. And we'll see how far that race goes. I mean, it could be kind of interesting. And the other thing is, you never know in politics. Mm-hmm. Are there other Democrats waiting in the wings? You know, right now it looks like Jerry Brown is hale and hearty, doing great, and let's hope that continues. But you never know. And this last weekend in Sacramento, the Democrats had their convention, and of course we saw Gavin Newsom and Kamala Harris both addressing. They're addressing the Democrats. They're also looking ahead for the future, whatever that may be. And I think there's a little bit of...
I think Kamala Harris probably got Obama's endorsement.
Yes, she didn't mention, of course, Kamala Harris was complimented by President Obama. I covered the Obama events here in San Francisco, and he called her the very brilliant, fair, but the best-looking attorney general in the country that you would have thought that he had.
What do you think of that? Was it too much made of that? Or
you know, I have watched this president at a number of events. The night before, he was talking about Jackie Robinson's widow, how he had sat next to her. She's 92, and he watched the 42 movie with her. And she was gorgeous, he said. He calls George Clooney good-looking. I mean, I think he's a serial admirer of people.
I don't know a man.
He's known her for a long time.
I don't know a man who doesn't say that about Kamala Harris. I'm sorry, when they meet her, that they all say it. So I give him a complete pass on that one.
But it does show the sense.
Can I say something about Abel Maldonado?
Because
Carla had a great story on that. What's really fascinating is, so Abel Maldonado was one of those Republicans that the right wing of the Republican Party, they haven't liked him. He worked with Arnold Schwarzenegger to work on that temporary tax increase. And in return, he got a measure that dealt with redistricting. He got the top two primary. And so, which they don't like because they want the party to make sure that we have a Republican running. They don't want voters to have a chance between two moderate Democrats and two moderate Republicans. They want a Republican to run and lose. Abel is also this guy. He's really taken it for the team on this one. He ran for appointed lieutenant governor, but then ran and lost. He just ran for Congress and lost against Lois Capps. And this should be for most politicians after this sort of the end. But what he's doing is, I think, he's really bringing these very conservative Republicans around to him. There's this guy, Ernie Conyeu. He used to be a member of Congress. His slogan was, "I'm Ernest, I won't con you." And he sends me something every week now. He loves Abel Maldonado. So, I mean, Republicans know that we don't really have anybody to run against Jerry Brown. So here you have this guy who... it may well have hurt him with some Republicans that he was a Latino. I don't think it hurt him with most at all. But I think there was that sliver with whom it might have hurt. And here he is willing to just go out there and fight and get beat up and bashed, as you know they will. By the way, by the time this election's over, he won't be a moderate anymore. They'll paint him as the most, you know, as Attila the Hun. So the fact that he's doing this, I think more power to the guy. I think it changes things a little.
Hey, I want to get this straight, that the son of Santa Maria versus the son of Sacramento, I would think it's more like the son of Santa Maria versus the great-grandfather of Sacramento. I mean, if I'm positioning this thing, I'm saying that the guy's on oxygen, you know?
Father time.
Yeah, give him a walking stick, you know? But of course, Jerry Brown has got more energy as a 76-year-old guy than a lot of people have at 30. He is taking one for the team. And Maldonado, I have to say, if more and more Maldonados show up, there is hope for the Republicans because, as I've said, they've got to go to these large groups that are just the Democrats are getting them by default.
Mm-hmm.
He can go. I hope he doesn't, for his sake, you know, and for the party's sake. I hope he doesn't go too far to the right because he will alienate the very groups he needs before he even begins. I can understand differences. Yeah. There should be differences. But he's got to be careful because the farther he goes to the right, the more that he will be painted as a Latino in name only, and that won't, a lino instead of a rhino.
He's not really Latino.
I'm also wondering, though, if there's a trend here on this one, which is, are we starting to see some of these generational contests in California? We saw it with Pete Stark in the East Bay, 80 years old, challenged by a guy who was 31, Eric Swalwell, who won against a 20-term congressman.
Because of Abel Maldonado's top two.
Yes, Abel Maldonado's top two primary. And then Maldonado race. And now over in Silicon Valley, you've got Mike Honda, who's a 7-term congressman, 71 years old, being challenged by a guy who's 36, Indian American, which is a rising clout group in Silicon Valley. Mm. That is going to be an interesting race to watch because that one's all about, traditional labor Democrat versus Silicon Valley tech Democrat, Asian Pacific Islander versus Indian American rising group, young versus old. You know, there's all kinds of interesting ones, and I think that one is going to be one that a lot of people will watch on the national level.
It is, and so New York Times had a big piece on it not too long ago, but. Just back to the thing you were talking about Maldonado and Maldonado types. I think with the Republican Party, mm-hmm. you know, maybe it's now because you can all get them in this room, but whatever it is, the Republican Party is now beginning to understand some of the lessons that the organization-leaning, in other words, organizing Democrats have learned for years from labor, and that is we start at the bottom. They had three victories this last election cycle, three victories in Southern California of Latino Republicans mm-hmm. in mayor's races and city council, and I think in a school district. And they all gained support from the Republican Party. And I'm not sure they would have won had they not. And so I think you have to think about it in terms of baby steps. And they're now taking those baby steps. And to me, that is a lot more heartening as someone who likes to see two strong parties. That's a lot more heartening than Maldonado, who I'm not so sure is going to get away with it as anything more than a token. You start at the beginning, you start to build, you start at the local level, local elected officials become assembly people and state senators and all that stuff, and I think
right.
then you've got
the
something
Republicans going. Have an organization.
You know what kills me
what?
About this, though? Okay, we've got a Democratic president, a Republican House, Democratic Senate. In California, every statewide office is held by a Democrat. We've got overwhelming majorities in the Assembly and in the Senate. And all you guys can do is talk about the dysfunctional Republican Party.
No.
You know, you'll kind of forgive me, because the Democrats sort of have a lot to do with what's going on, and all people can do is talk about how the Republicans have to get their act together. I'm sorry, but I think a lot of the Republicans
in Sacramento
are because...
They only have 29% of the voters.
What?
They only have 29% of the voters. They're in danger of becoming a third party.
But the dysfunction in Sacramento isn't because of that little party with the baby steps. It's because of the giant steps that are being taken by the Goliath party, okay?
If you don't take responsibility for it when you control everything,
I feel better.
When will you
ever? I don't know how you guys feel. I feel better. Thank you.
No, we're talking two different things. We're talking getting elected versus governing. And to your point, everybody knows you put two Democrats in a room and you got three different ideas. You know, I mean Democrats
are
terrible.
And about $4 billion in deficit spending. But
Okay.
But there's no question. All you have to do is look at Jerry Brown's education proposal, you know, to redistribute the education funding formula. And to a two-thirds legislature, Democrat, it has no chance of going. Why? Because not all Democrats are alike. In fact, there's so much, you know, not alike. You know, they're just in the room with a D.
Yeah, but they are in charge.
Loosely.
Okay, briefly, speaking
and,
of
and
one...
And so, wait a minute. So then, are they dysfunctional or not, then, if they're so loosely
Of course they're dysfunctional.
Yeah, they're both
Thank you. So maybe we could talk about what the Democrats are doing wrong every
once
in a while, too.
Would you like to say something, John?
Sure. As always, in San Francisco, we must ask the eternal question, what of Gavin Newsom? Is he going to cool his heels for another 4 years?
He's stuck.
Yeah.
I mean, he's stuck. He's stuck in the job that he says he does nothing in. Okay? And he does nothing in it so well that he's going to do it 4 more years.
Very well.
You may see him do something else. I don't know. You're right. I mean, there may be a sort of a wake-up call where he realizes that.
The
guy is a very gifted communicator. I will say that. I mean, he does not come dead when he speaks in front of grassroots groups. I see him increasingly on Meet the Press, as a pundit. You're absolutely right, Larry. He is stuck in the job that he's in and sort of becomes more irrelevant to every day he's in that job. But the fact is, I think when you're looking ahead at the future of the California Democratic Party, he's certainly somebody you got to consider. And as Kamala Harris is,
and he's handsome.
Yeah. I think he can be. He can be an anchor for Al Jazeera.
Well, enough of the state politicians. Let's kind of. I know it's way too early to talk about 2016.
No, let's do it.
So let's talk about 2016.
Yeah.
Do you know who Neil deGrasse Tyson is, the astronomer who is kind of famous or infamous for leading the charge to make Pluto not a planet? And when he was here on this stage, and he was defending himself against, you know, the hate mail he was getting from grade school kids. And he kind of defined, this is going to be a long way to go for this punchline, but he defined how you define what a planet is. And one of the things it has to do is clear its orbit. You know, it has to push out everything else from its orbit. It has to be big enough and powerful enough to be the gravity well there, or to create the gravity well. So, Deborah, is Hillary Clinton the planet of 2016? Is she going to clear that field on the Democratic side, or will people not be intimidated because she was the presumptive winner last time and didn't go anywhere?
I'm always wrong about Hillary Clinton. I thought she was going to divorce Bill after he left the White House. So I'm always wrong about her.
No.
but I think that it's a mistake to assume that she is a shoo-in, and I'll tell you why. Remember 2008? Now, she won California, but people were so ready to ditch her. I mean, the wave of people going for Barack Obama was huge. And so I would not assume that she owns. I know that everybody thinks that she owns it, but I don't. And what Carla was talking about earlier about the sort of the young money and how they don't play by the rules in politics. So I think the Democratic nomination is hers to lose, and she will. I mean, I think she just might. She ran a horrible campaign in 2008 also. But people were angry. They didn't want her. A lot of people didn't want her. California did, but a lot of other Democratic operatives weren't that happy with her. So while everybody's sort of putting the crown on her head right now, that doesn't mean it's hers. That's what I mean.
I think you had a very unusual situation in 2008. You had a transformational candidate in Barack Obama. But look, I'm already seeing, I talked to Ellen Tauscher, former congresswoman, last week. She's come forward with a group. There's already a draft Hillary movement out there. There's some already big Democrats involved in this. They're getting thousands of people on Facebook. They're moving this already, trying to, and talking to Ellen Tauscher said, look, we got to get the message out to people. It's not enough to just say, hey, I'm going to support, we're going to make sure Hillary has everything in place. So the decision is going to be easy for her to do that. I mean, this is a sort of a growing group of people. Deborah's right. Lots can happen. But you got to wonder, I mean, the Democrats, when the Republicans have this sort of long list of people you're looking at, the Democrats. Really,
Joe Biden. Joe Biden's running.
Yeah.
Joe Biden's running.
I agree. But if Hillary's in, he's not. Yeah. And Andrew Cuomo, I mean, everybody says, you know, not a likable guy personally. Interesting, strong governor, etc. But
Anthony Weiner's looking for a job.
Is Jerry Brown going to run?
Jerry Brown.
I'm serious. Jerry Brown?
Fourth time around, could be the charm. He's done it over two centuries, but, you know. I guess I believe that if Hillary Clinton wants the nomination, absent some sort of gaffe, she'll get it. She'll
mm-hmm.
get it for so many reasons. Number one, not necessary order here. You know, she's done it already. She's run. She's learned. She's smart. She is very smart. She's learned from her mistakes, beginning with Mark Penn all the way down. And she's not going to make those mistakes again. Number two, this may offend people, but I've got tenure. so many people are dying to see a competent woman get this job. And say what you will, if you don't like her, whatever, she is as competent as anybody can be. And you know, there's a momentum here. And women are already, a lot of women, sorry, Deborah, are disposed toward the mm-hmm. Democratic mm-hmm. Party. We know that, the gender gap. It will be a tsunami, and Biden and Cuomo and what's the guy's name from Maryland? I can't think of his name. Starts with M. They will all part the sea for her so quickly it won't be funny. You know,
yes, I think the same demographic coalition that worked for Barack Obama in this last election will
a lot of
will,
them
absolutely
a lot
women,
of them.
Young voters, African Americans, Latinos.
LGBT.
That
I'm not saying she wins.
LGBT.
I'm not saying she wins because I think that's a whole different story. But the nomination, wow, she's a tidal wave, I think.
Deborah, why don't we give you the last word?
Well,
maybe
I'm wrong again about Hillary. wouldn't be the first time.
Would you like to? Who do you think or expect or would like to see on the Republican side? Because we're seeing a number of names now of people who are either testing the waters or who, again, they've got a pretty big benchmark.
It's way too early to make a prediction, but I'll say. But here's somebody who I think will have an odd effect, and that's Rand Paul.
Mm-hmm.
That I think you want to keep an eye on him.
Odd effect?
What did I say?
Odd effect.
I wasn't listening to myself.
I said odd.
Okay.
An odd effect.
That's probably
effect.
True.
And that is, you know, his dad Ron Paul has run for president many times, and he was in the race before. But I think Rand Paul is. The function that he will serve in, I don't expect him to win the nomination, but he's injecting this libertarianism into the Republican Party.
And I think
Party.
That's where these young voters could go,
That's right. So I think he's a person to watch because just as we saw everybody trying to run to the right of each other in 2008, you're going to actually see people watching what he does, noticing that it it has an effect on young voters and other voters, and that you'll see some other Republicans picking up on it.
Well, very good. Let me just mention, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California program. Our guests on today's week-to-week program are Carla Marinucci, Dr. Larry Gersten, and Deborah J. Saunders. We've got some really interesting questions today. I mean, really, some good ones, some interesting ones, a few odd ones. But one that I just have to read part of because it's not a question, but Paul Armstrong, are you here? Can you raise your hand? Is this true? You were Margaret Thatcher's bodyguard?
Oh. Wow, really?
Very interesting.
2 years.
Very good.
Wow.
Well, very interesting. Thank you for coming, and thanks
wow.
for the comments on it.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Someone getting to the issue of the growing minority involvement of percentage of the population, someone, you know, we focus a lot on the Hispanic votes. What about any comments on Asian American voters? Are they likely to be more differentiated in their party affiliation, or what do we know already?
They went 72% for Obama, which was quite surprising to me, by
right.
the way.
And did that kind of go down coming. The ticket as well?
Yes, in California they were just as strong, if not stronger. I think people sometimes underestimate, you know, the power of that coalition, Asian Americans, African Americans, Latinos, gays, three to one, women by 11 points. I mean, it was pretty astounding. And the question is, which of those groups can be at least divided in some way? And I think there are issues for the Republicans, by the way. I think especially on social conservative issues that they can score. Anyway, long answer. Sorry.
And I think the other interesting part about the Asian vote is what we talked about earlier, the South Asian vote, which is the Indian American vote primarily. The largest concentration of Indian American voters in the United States is in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. That is going to be a factor to watch. They are some incredible entrepreneurs who get, you know, within one generation come to this country mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. are some of the biggest venture capitalists and movers there. And I think they're going to be, that power, that voice is going to be something to watch.
Someone wants to know a nice short question. What about Tom McClintock? 2 exclamation points.
Tom McClintock. Well, you know, we just did a story over the weekend that this is the 10th anniversary since the recall, California recall. Mm-hmm. It started 10 years ago, if you can all believe this. Tom McClintock was going to be the savior of the Republican Party back then. I think today he's viewed much differently. He's kind of the Dr. No of it, no to everything. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there is this top two primary. There could be a challenge for him in his district. I'm interested to see that. A lot has changed in the 10 years since he ran for governor.
That district is very different now. And he had a tough race the last two
That's
elections.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But people have a weird soft spot for him, too. I mean, I like Tom McClintock. I've known him forever. And he is the most hardcore fiscal conservatives. He's against spending anything on anything. And I would not underestimate that appeal to voters delivered the way he delivers it, because he believes. So.
New York City got a big decrease in murders with 1, criminal profiling, 2, stop and frisk, 3, harsh prosecution of gun violators. So any comments on New York City's experience as well as what that may or may not tell us? See, anyone have a question? No? No one? Okay, then we'll just...
I want to say...
Deborah?
Hold me back. Because I think about this so much when I look at these proposals that they have for the gun laws. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at one of the proposals for the universal background check. And you'd have to have so many people registering this stuff. We know... And who's going to do this? All the work that has to be done. We know that a lot of things fall through the crack. And the smarter way to improve, I think, how things work is to just do things better. Instead of, if a law doesn't work, we're going to pass a bigger law. and we may or may not pay for it. We may or may not give it the resources. And New York to me is a great example of that. I mean, you can look at cities like Chicago, and New York has, you know, cities with gun control laws. New York has in Washington. It doesn't necessarily change the crime rates at all. It doesn't the gun violence rates at all. But smart enforcement is really makes a difference, and New York proves that.
There's also this issue of the rights of society versus the right of the individual, and how you draw that line is very important, because the more you go toward things like racial profiling and mm-hmm. and taking away everybody's gun no matter what, and the more you inch toward the loss of individualism and individual rights. And I mean, I said it the day that 9/11 happened, the first thing I said to my students is that, civil liberties is now being redefined. And this is a hard thing for some of us to get our hands around, because, you don't want to go too far in any one direction lest we lose too many of those individual rights.
Mm-hmm. How many kids showed up at your class that day?
Oh, a lot of them.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You serve them wine and snacks, but things in the crowd.
You got to give them this somehow.
Okay. Well, one last question before we do our news quiz, and this harks back to the immigration issue. And someone asked a question that I've heard others ask as well. Why do evangelicals increasingly support relaxing immigration policies? Is it reunification of families?
Goes back to the biblical teaching about welcoming the stranger. That's where many of them are coming from. I think that's... And we have seen a shift. Many of these churches are actively involved, and many of these pastors are now actively involved in this. And I think the DREAM Act campaign has been very, very effective, and it's sort of brought forward this issue. Well, I interviewed the young man who's the president of the math club at UC Berkeley, obviously a brilliant kid, undocumented immigrant, and has come forward. Many of these kids... we had an intern at the Chronicle, Jose Vargas, who went on to the Washington Post mm-hmm. and has been really upfront and forward on this. I think this is sort of shifting public opinion. And now that the churches are involved for Republicans, this could be, I think, a very big difference in where the candidates stand on this.
Okay. The dog agrees.
Okay.
Well, we're now going to do our news quiz. I need two volunteers who will come up and compete to answer five questions each. Can you raise your hand if you want to?
Yes,
ma'am. Come on up. Yes,
Jeopardy.
Sir.
They're even happy to do it.
I know. It's so much worse when you have to draft people.
I'll just show this to you to give you inspiration.
Check the seal when she gives it to you. Come on over. Make sure
this is the Vanna White of week to week.
Okay. Norma, I know your name. And you, sir? Tom. Okay. And what we're going to do is, we'll go ladies first, if you'll allow me a little sexism. Okay. I'm going to ask you five questions.
Okay.
You'll answer them. And then we're going to go with you. If you both come up even, then we have some tiebreakers.
Another bottle of Tito.
Okay.
Well, they've got a budget here.
Yeah. So, Norma, your first question. According to an Associated Press report, how much did San Francisco pay out over the past 3 years in legal settlements as a result of accidents involving its famed cable cars? Within $1 million, one way or the other.
I thought these were the questions you asked before. Oh, dear.
Do you want to take a guess?
Okay. $10 million?
Uh-oh.
I said within $1 million, so I'm sorry I can't.
Oh,
but it was $8 million. You're actually closer than... And that's just for cable car accidents. The city pays about $12 million annually for lawsuits related to all of our mass transit accidents. So...
Okay.
Here's
tough grader.
They only get tougher. Teen singer... Justin Bieber sparked a new round of controversy when he wrote what in the visitor's book of the Anne Frank Museum?
Oh.
You don't have to get the quote exactly, but do you know what he...
I don't know that one.
Okay. You know? Hand her the microphone.
This is so incredible.
He assumed or he wished that if she were alive and he were alive then, that
she would like his music.
Hopefully she would have been
a believer.
Yeah. That's what he calls his fans. Yeah. Okay. So the leader of what country was not invited to Margaret Thatcher's funeral? This is an echo of tensions still existing from a war she led against that country.
Argentina?
That's right. Ah, okay. Let's see. The BBC reluctantly agreed to air what song, which was pushed up the charts by opponents of Margaret Thatcher?
The Witch is Dead.
That's right. Okay. Let me keep my scoring here. Okay, your last question. Name the scandal-ridden former New York congressman who's making a possible comeback by running for mayor of New York.
Oh, dear. Yeah, if you'd asked me what office he was running for...
You must have a snapshot of him in your head.
Wiener.
Okay, very good. Three right. Tom, come on over. Anthony Wiener.
It's a pun.
Yeah, was that, you're giving his name or... No, forget it. Okay.
Wienermobile.
Your first question. Name the scandal-ridden former South Carolina governor who's making a possible comeback by running for Congress from his state.
Uh-oh.
Mark Foley.
No, I'm sorry. It was Mark Sanford, the Appalachian Trail hiker.
Yeah, that's
right.
Okay.
An Argentina connection.
Yes, they cause us a lot of trouble. New Pope Francis appointed an advisory council of top cardinals from around the world to advise him on the reform of what?
The marriage laws.
No, actually the Vatican bureaucracy, or the Curia, as they're called. Let's see. So, here's a good American political one. Name the liberal super PAC that has been accused of secretly taping a campaign strategy meeting with Senator Mitch McConnell and his advisors. This is the... You see the story? This was where they were taped talking about possible campaign strategy against Ashley Judd. The group was also in the news in the last couple of months for something else they had come out kind of rather insultingly saying about McConnell.
Acorn.
No. Maybe the successor. It's a group called Progress Kentucky. And this group had earlier been blasted by Democrats and Republicans alike because they had insinuated that McConnell was... They had tweeted. See, tweeting gets everyone in trouble in politics. They had tweeted that McConnell was shipping jobs to Asia because his wife is of Chinese descent. So, okay.
Joe.
Senator Marco Rubio criticized singer Jay-Z for visiting what country?
Cuba.
That's right. Okay. What do we have? One more. Yes, I pick and choose. Why did Israeli police arrest five women at the site of the biblical temple compound? The fact that they were women is the key part.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, they weren't allowed in.
I'm going to give it to you. They were performing religious rituals that were banned for women to be there, so they weren't allowed to be there. So that was. The total? We have a winner.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Tom.
Okay.
Norma, come on over. Let's give a hand to Norma. There you go.
No, I was pretty good.
Oh, my God, you'll have to try that. Tom, thank you very much. Everybody, thank you very much for being here. Thanks to our panel, Carla Marinucci, Larry Gersten, Deborah J. Saunders, and thanks everyone for coming out.
Oh.
Have a good night. Have a great week.
Congratulations.